Hi, I'm Scott Miller, host of Career on Course, where our vision is in the coming months and years to interview hundreds, if not thousands, of career experts to bring to you all the details you need to make better career decisions for you. We will have piercingly insightful conversations with an occupational therapist, a software developer, a wind turbine technician, pastry chef, event planner, chief financial officer, a barber, you name it. If the career exists, I'm going to interview them and bring to you what's the day in the life look like? What are the ups and the downs? What are the interpersonal conflicts? How do you pivot out? How do you stay in? When people burn out, why do they leave? Every question you might have, I'm intending to ask a wide variety of career professionals so that this podcast can help you pick better. Let's get started with getting your career on course. Hi, welcome back to another episode of Career on Course. I'm your host, Scott Miller, where in each conversation, we dive deep into different careers so that you can, quite frankly, pick better, so that you can make more intentional decisions about your career. This podcast, titled Career on Course, comes on the heels of my seventh and most recent book named the same, Career on Course, 10 Strategies to Take Your Career from Accidental to Intentional, available in audio, digital, and print. In many ways, this podcast is the 11th strategy. This has been a passion of mine for decades to help people choose better, pick better, to really put more intention into, is this profession the right for them? Today, our career highlight is barber. And this is a segment of the beauty industry because, of course, we know there are differences between being a barber and a hairdresser. Many people will call that a cosmetologist. Some of them may or may not also be an esthetician or a nail tech. And today I chose a barber, Samantha Binns, to highlight because this is an interesting career that I think a lot of people don't talk about when they think about being in the hair industry. Perhaps most people think about being a cosmetologist, but there's an actually interesting path and a difference between being a barber and cosmetologist. And today you are going to learn all the ins and the outs. Samantha, welcome to Career on Course.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, I'd love to start and maybe launch with your journey into the suite of being a barber. Talk a bit about your career path, some of the things you did early on, and then how did you really hone in to choosing to become a barber?
I mostly started in the service industry as, I don't know, a 14, 15-year-old. Worked in restaurants. I upgraded to being a bartender for about 6 years. I just really enjoyed hosting, giving people a good time and a good experience. And so I really focused on after my move across country, okay, what do I want to do? Where do I want to take my career? Do I want to grab hold of it? Do I still want to do the same things? And I had multiple conversations with friends and family that definitely reminded me of how much of a hostess I am at heart. I was making little plastic plates of food for family growing up and just loved giving people an experience. And I was also that friend that would do my friend's hair, makeup, everything for school or some sort of prom, homecoming. And I just really love making people feel beautiful and give that confidence. And so I said, all right, let's do it. I already had a bunch of friends in the barber community where I lived at before, and I went to the school, talked to them about the barber school they had there. They didn't really have a specific program for it because they were more of a cosmetology school. The advice that I was geared towards was, okay, you can go to cosmetology and get a certain amount of hours that state required, which was more than barbering. So if you wanted to be a barber, it was going to be easier to go back instead of continue more education after you already passed your state board test to be more in the cosmetology side.
So let me follow up on that. I have a broad question that has some specific answers. When I think about the beauty industry, I think about people that are estheticians, right? They focus on skin and skincare and facials. I think about nail techs, right? Where we go with my boys to get a pedicure and a manicure. And then I think about a classic barber shop, primarily men's haircuts, but I'm guessing not always. And then I think about a cosmetologist or a hairdresser, a high-end salon where they're doing things like color and perms and weaves and things like that. Would you maybe just give us a level set on how are those similar? How are they different? Walk through what are the processes for each of them. I know you're not an expert on all of those, but I'd like people to come out to understand why would someone choose to be a barber exclusively? And then what does that education process look like? Recognizing it might be different from state to state.
to be more on the barbering side, you definitely need less hours because you're not learning color as a cosmetologist would, not learning skin, hair, chemical processes, and nails as cosmetology does a blanket of that. You can choose to have a little bit stronger of a niche for esthetician, from what I understand. You could go to esthetician school if you want to do skincare, facials, more like chemical services on the face. As a regular cosmetologist, you won't be able to do that because you don't have the training behind that. Same with nails. You won't be able to apply acrylics, from my understanding, and just a little bit more chemical processes. You're able to do manicures and things like that as a cosmetologist as well. As a cosmetologist, you won't be able to straight razor shave because that's specific to barbering.
So let's talk about the process of becoming a barber. I know it is different from state to state. Generally, in your experience, as new barbers come in to your shop and you meet people from different states, if you had to say a generalization, what does it usually take in terms of number of hours? What is the state board certification licensing process like? And honestly, what does it cost? Like, how does barber school compare to maybe cosmetology school, length and cost?
The cosmetology I went to school with was about $20,000, and that's for 1,500 hours, and it basically took me about a year if you go full-time. Part-time, it'll take you about a year and a half to 2 years, same price. Barbering in the state I'm at now, I believe, is around $10,000, so it's half the price, and it's also 1,000 hours, so it's going to cut off about $500 to $700, depending on where you're at.
Yeah, the price in almost half the time.
Yeah, you can get that. You can get your full barber's license, what I've been told, where I'm at here, in 6 months, as long as you pass the state board test, and then you'll be good to go.
And you, when you go into salons, you see at least mid-level to high-range mm-hmm. salons and barbershops, you often see someone apprenticing. Do you find that coming out of school with your boards passed, you're ready to roll? Do you find that it's easier to start earning money as a barber than it is as a cosmetologist? Is it the same entry path? Are you doing low paid but really valuable apprenticeship, learning how mm-hmm. the salon operates? What is the entry from passing boards to earning money look like from being a barber as opposed to being a cosmetologist?
Cosmetology, you have more options to make more money. You can just do haircuts. You can just do color. You can do a combination of those both. You can do a small nail service, you can do a scalp treatment. More barbering is haircuts, more or less, and then shaves as well. I'd probably say, in my experience, men are really loyal and will come back for haircuts more often. So you're able to build a clientele a little faster. And then women's cutting and coloring is more lucrative on a appointment basis, but maybe not come back as often. Once it's out.
Yeah. So we have to talk about speed to earning. So let's just say you graduate on January 7th with your barber boards and your license. The ability to actually get yourself in a barber shop and making money, is that speed faster than it might be for a cosmetologist? I guess I'm asking, how much internship or apprenticeship is required to move from graduating to earning and having customers, as opposed to what it might be like for a cosmetologist? I'm not looking for any particular answer. Just wondering, is it weeks of apprenticeship, or can you literally graduate and you're cutting hair the next day?
You can graduate and cut hair the next day. Just kind of on what shop you go to, what their culture
yeah.
is.
What
like.
The owner's criteria is, what the culture mm-hmm. is, things like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe they have a little like higher standards, like they require you to know the business of the shop before you even cut hair. So you can help out the other barbers while you're also learning, still learning to cut hair.
So we're going to focus the rest of this conversation on barbering, but thank you for suffering through my comparisons to cosmetology, because I think a lot of us lump it in together, right? Are all cosmetologists barbers, or are all barbers? They're not, clearly. Are there any like natural personality traits or skills or interests that, as you've been in this business for a decade plus and built a large clientele, is there anything in common to say, hey, here are the four or five things that I see generally make great barbers? And maybe it's not about muscles in your hand, but what would you say are anecdotally commonalities of people that thrive being a barber?
I think communication is number one. Communication, talking to the client, seeing what they want, what they need, telling them about your life, their lifestyle. You're able to more curate what they want if you know their lifestyle and their personality. You have to have a creative eye, I would say. You have to know symmetry, how it would balance off each other. Basically, we're just a bunch of problem solvers. So if you're good at that's really great as well. I would also say personality wise, you have to be interested in people. You have basically a new boss every 30 to an hour, and you have to be interested in what they're doing. You're going to have, I don't really feel like there's any other career that you're going to have so many conversations with such a variety of people. Like, you can learn anything. You can learn how to be a real estate broker. You can learn how to be a plumber. You'll have anybody in your chair, which is such a great benefit. Learn people and, I don't know, be on their journey with them. It's really good.
I find it fascinating that the first trait you said was communication. You didn't say artistry or a passion for hair or beauty. You said communication. I want to riff on that for a bit because I think that's so important. I'm guessing you have, like you mentioned, all types in your chair, people that chat nonstop, tell you about all of their life problems. They want your advice on things. They just want to have a free therapy session that costs half of what an actual therapist costs. I'm guessing you have introverts that don't want to talk at all. And I'm guessing barbers have personalities too. I'm going to guess most of you are extroverts, or you wouldn't have gone into the business of meeting and having 10 clients a day. Talk about how you have to calibrate your own personality, your tone, your rate, your pitch, how much you talk, read the body language of the person. Sounds like barbering is first and foremost around developing relationships that change every 30 to 40 minutes.
Yeah, you have to be able to basically read the room, which is your chair. You might have a different conversation going on with a different barber, and you might be able to have a little camaraderie, or your person just wants to hang out. They have a stressful life. They have 7 kids at home. This is their only time to have self-care, so they just want to hang out and relax. You just have to read the room. Like, you don't really need to ask them, do you need a silent appointment? You're able to feel how they feel. We're in each other's bubbles. There's no one else really that stands that close without you being like, why are you standing so close to me? And we give the opportunity to give like self-care and take a breath and take a moment just to like enjoy your space.
I think this is a valuable point to keep belaboring. Were you taught this in school? Did you learn this from your salon owner or a mentor? How did you come to understand that, yes, I'm in the hair business, but I'm really in the sort of power relationship conversation, EQ business? How did you come to understand that? Because I know some barbers that are clueless to this, right? That just either natter on nonstop and you can't help but hear their conversation 3 or 4 chairs over, or everybody is super quiet and there's no vibe in the store, or the music is so loud, you can't hear yourself think. I'm guessing people are like me. They come to get a haircut for 2 reasons. One is they need a haircut, and 2, they need to decompress. They want a little bit of self-care, and they're probably equally as important. How did you learn that what comes out of your mouth is as important as what comes out of your scissors?
Just time. I feel like life just brings that to you. Just being able to like pause, take a moment, take in what that person's saying, and not just keep rambling on. And I don't really know how I learned it. I feel like it just comes with it. You have so many people every single day. It just comes naturally or unnaturally, depending on your personality. And you have to learn to do that.
I know no 2 days are the same, but I'm really interested to know, what is the day in the life of a barber like? Would you take a few minutes and just walk us through, recognizing, I'm guessing every salon has their own protocol, right? And every barber shop has their own routine of how stuff is organized and set out and cleaned and prepped. Walk us through what a typical day in your life looks like, so people can get a sense for the stamina required and maybe even the monotony of the routine for that matter.
Yeah. Speaking of stamina, we do not have a seat in the house unless it's the bathroom for the barbers. So we're standing all day. We just take pride in making sure you stand up and are greeting people. When you walk in, we just make sure you like look at a schedule, see you have on the schedule, see if the return client, a new client, because you're going to treat a return client different than a new client. You're going to give them the breakdown of how to sit in the chair, what things we offer, what the routine is when I sit down. And then you're also going to look at the entire appointment book as a whole. See how your barber next to you, to your left or to your right, is their days operating. So you're aware of what's going on in the shop as well, how to help them out, how they can help you out, making sure you have time to sweep, fold copious amounts of towels, do a crap ton of laundry, making sure the shop is clean. The product shelves are also really nice and dusted. And then you're able to curate your day how it needs to go. You have a client that has a little bit more difficult hair. You're able to know you can take a little bit more time with them. If you have a client that you've seen regularly every 2 weeks and they're just getting a trim, you're able to take a little bit more easier time with them with their haircut, but are able to connect with them more emotionally and communicatively.
Keep going a little bit. So on a typical day, you're going to take appointments nonstop for nonstop. 4 hours, 6 hours, 10 hours. How many appointments a day? How much time in between? Walk us through the things that people would be interested in to know. What is a day in the life of the barber like in terms of your cadence and your schedule? You tend to take your first appointment at what time?
I usually, Wednesday, Thursday, I take my first appointment at 2. I'm there from 2 to 9 p.m. So I have 7 hours straight of a haircut an hour, or I have an hour and a half service where it's a haircut and a beard trim. And so every hour we have a haircut. Every hour and a half we have a haircut, beard trim. No breaks other than cleaning up your station, sanitizing your tools, and then bringing the next person in right away, sweeping in between, making sure that the rest of the barbershop is taken care of. When a client walks in, we greet them. We all greet them with, hey, how's it going? Do you know who your barber is today? Would you care for water, sparkling, or still? Or if we have a flavored option as well. And then just getting them comfortable, let them know who their barber is if they've never been there, and just making sure that they feel checked in and are ready for their appointment whenever the barber is ready and they'll come grab you. And then at the end of the day, we just make sure everything's all nice and tidy and prepared for the next day.
Let's talk about the level of services and income. This is obviously an important question parents will have for those kids who are going into barbering, or for that matter, someone looking for a pivot as well, right? Maybe someone was doing, maybe they were a massage therapist or they were a nail tech, any kind of that matter. And they're thinking about the lifestyle of a barber. Talk about some of, and I know there's different types of barbershops, right? I happen to know you work in a fairly high-end barbershop. I'm guessing at the top of the line in terms of fees and services. Mm-hmm. Talk about the different business models. I know I've heard you can rent a chair, you can have percent of the take, some maybe even work by the hour. Mm-hmm. Talk about the different models that you are aware of. And then would you talk generally about earning range and the upsides and the downsides of the economics of being a barber?
Okay. There's, like you said, there's multiple different types of barber shops. There's people that like sports clips where you just walk in, you wait for a person, you don't know who you're going to get. Sometimes you'll sit down, get a haircut, and then you leave. You're just in and out. If you're a busy scheduled person, that's great.
Not mentioning any particular salons per se, but the one you referenced, that typically is going to be how much for a haircut? Like $30, $40? I don't even know.
Yeah, $15 to $40, depending on where it's located.
Got it. $15 to $40. Okay. Mm-hmm. So what's the next level up?
I would probably say one that offers more of a straight razor shave or a beard trim along with that. I would say those haircuts are, the national average right now is $45, and then it goes up if you're adding more services or anything a la carte as well. And those take anywhere between 30 to an hour long appointments, depending on who you are. And then let's see.
And then probably your level, right? I'm guessing you would be one of the more expensive barber services in town. Am I right about that?
Yes.
And the average haircut you're giving, not beard trim, the average haircut you're giving retails for about how much?
$105.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about that. What differentiates a $105 haircut from a $35 haircut? And I'm not trying to have you defend your price. I happen to know you're booked nonstop. What's the difference? This is a three times value in perception. What's the difference? Skill, attention?
I would say 100% continuing education. Hmm. I think that is like the most important thing. You're going to build your resume, all of the different types of services you can provide to somebody. You'll be able to find your own niche in what you like in barbering, whether it's longer haircuts, whether it's fading. And you're able to really hone in on those skills and create a huge environment of community relationships during continuing education. You'll have other people support you. You might be a mentor. You might find a mentor, which is going to push you. And those are those really small, consistent things that are always going to create a better relationship for you with your career and your client with their career with you.
Wow. And can you talk about the different business models of salons in terms of how the economics work out, and what are some of the upsides and downsides of how different owners manage or share in the proceeds with their employees?
I've done a few different options. Where I first started at, it was more of a level tier situation. So you start off as an apprenticeship, you work your way to level one, up through four, and then you become a master. Those are different percentages that you make on your way up. You might start off at making 30% of your haircut, and you can work your way up to making 60%. But there are small requirements that you have to do to move up. You have to have retention, product sales, overall sales, and consistency of booking with your schedule and your client's schedule. And then I've also done chair rental as well. And those range depending on where you're at. They can be anywhere between $400 a month to $2,000 a month, just depending on your demographic, economics wise, where you're at as well.
And would you expect that whether you are getting a escalating scale of income or you're renting a chair, does the barbershop typically supply for you reception, scheduling services, any kind of cleaning services, product services? You have to pay for those. Is that different per salon? What's the expectation?
I would say it's different per salon. The biggest thing that I've noticed is bring your own tools, because those are going to be specific to you. The shop will provide products for you to use because they want you to sell those certain ones because they have a good relationship with the product people out there. And then there's also a service for either towels being taken out, or we do them as well. They're able to provide social media, photography, videography for the shop as well. And then most of the things I think are pretty much 50-50 are marketing, product, and use of towels.
Tell me about some innovations happening in the industry around scheduling, receptionist, online. How does it work in your salon? I'd argue that yours is quite progressive because you have a fairly efficient system going on, including how you're notified about it. Talk about how you see what is the strategy your salon uses, and is that kind of the future? And what do you see changing in terms of technological innovations around paying, gratuities, scheduling, things like that?
Yeah, we do online booking. We make sure that if you're a first clientele, you book online first. We get all your information, phone number, email, just so we can send you promotions as well. And then as you book, you'll pick a service, a barber, and then you'll prepay for your appointment. The shop owner has really implemented that, and it has drastically reduced no-call, no-shows, drastically, because people are committed because they paid, basically like buying a ticket to a jazz game. If you're going to pay for it because you want to go, and if you can't make it, they're not going to give you your money back, I think. You're paying for that hour with that barber, and you can get a haircut, a shave, whatever you need done in that hour, that's yours because you paid for it. And I think that is a huge thing that a lot of barbershops are not doing. They'll just book somebody, and then 10 minutes before their appointment, they're like, oh, sorry, I can't make it. But as someone in this career, if you're not cutting hair, you're not making money.
And typically is the culture that if someone cancels, you're not in your current situation, but by and large, if they're calling the receptionist at the front desk and they're canceling with him or her, you all typically aren't charging them because that will offend someone and they won't want to come back, or you can't resell your time. Mm-hmm. Are you seeing that as, is that more of a progressive trend where barbershops are requiring prepayment so that there's confusion is minimized?
Yes.
No shows are eliminated and everyone's getting paid. Is that a trend?
Yeah. And then there's a very clear like cancellation policy. You have up to 4 hours to cancel it. Usually that 4 hours is enough time for that spot to be filled.
I see.
You give people enough grace where it's not 24 hours. You can get really sick within 24 hours. So four hours is a really nice small buffer where it can be filled. But it's also respectful to my time and your time and other clients' time.
So let's just say you're working an 8-hour, 9-hour shift and you can maximize it with 8 or 9 haircuts. And you walk in on a Tuesday morning and you've got four. You've got four people on schedule at 2, 4, 6, and 8. I'm making this up. How often is your schedule updated with new haircuts and cancellations? And how do you keep track of that? There's no receptionist in your barber. How do you know what your schedule's like hour to hour? I'm guessing it changes with some frequency.
Yeah, we have an app that will text us immediately when we get a booking. It'll tell us who it is, what time it's at, and what they're getting. And then we're able to look at our schedule and either approve it or need to change it around so our schedule is more efficient with other people's opportunity to book as well.
Got it.
So we always get like a message, a text message through our phone. We get an email as well. So if there's any miscommunication, it's all brought through the app.
Last question on finances, because everybody's going to be really interested. And I'm not trying to delve into yours. I've not invited the IRS to attend, but I'm interested to know generally in the industry, I'm guessing a portion of your income, a large portion, comes through gratuity, right? Both credit cards and probably Venmo and cash. This isn't a big secret. And you're responsible for declaring your own income and taxes. I'm also guessing that you're paid for different services. Can you give us a range of what maybe an out-of-college barber school might be expecting to make? What's the top end? What's the middle range? And how do they come in forms of services versus product versus gratuity?
Okay. Starting off, I mean, I'm okay with saying my starting off yearly salary I got right out of school after like my small apprenticeship when I was able to be a level one, I made about 27 for the year right out. And that felt really great for me. It was my money. I earned it. I got a percentage of it. And then I also got 10% of my product sales along with that. And that's not including any cash tips or Venmo or anything like that. That was just reported. And each year I've worked on doubling my previous year. I would say on average, a barber can make anywhere starting off around 25, just because you're building your clientele. And then from there, you should be able to double it because you've recruited more people. You've had a lot more opportunities to continued education to prove that your prices can go up. And you've worked hard on that. I'd probably say the top tiers in the six figures. The middle is around probably 60 to 70, and the lower end's around 30.
So if I'm making this question up, I'm going to guess 20 barbers across your barber network. Of those 20 barbers, how many of them are making more than $100,000 a year?
I'd probably say more than half.
Okay. So 12 of them are making 100 or more. Obviously, in your business, if you're not cutting, you're not earning. So that has to do with your productivity. And then what percentage of them are making between 60 and 100?
I'd probably say the other half. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So most barbers, if they're a couple years in, they've got a clientele, a book of business, they're making somewhere between 60 to 100. And then, but half of them are also making over 100. You can earn a nice living, I guess, is my point, is that those who might think that barbers are on the lower end, you could earn your way in 5 or 6 years if you're hustling and building a great business. You could earn your way to a six-figure income.
100%. Yep.
Easy to do.
It depends on your career path, how driven you are to get more retention of clients. How often are you asking your clients for referrals? That's huge.
So let's talk about that. Let's talk about book of business. Because I think in addition to being a great communicator and creative and have stamina, you've got to be your own marketing tool. I'm guessing there's some marketing that comes from the brand equity of the barbershop and walk-ins. In fact, that percentage, on average, what percentage of a barber's business might be walk-in if they've been in business for 5 or 6 years and they're fairly established?
I'd probably say 10 to 15%. Basically want your personal books as an established barber to be 80% booked all the time because you're going to lose clients, they're going to move.
Okay.
They're going to just find a different barber. They have different financial situations. So you always want to have a little bit of availability to bring in new people.
Let's talk about your book of business. I'm guessing you don't have a marketing degree from college, but you've earned it the hard way. Speak to that side of barbering, which is unless your barbershop is on Fifth Avenue in New York, you're not going to have a bunch of traffic. What are some of the best practices around how barbers build their book of business? Like you said, up towards 80% to accommodate for people who have changes in their barber needs or economically, or also for walk-ins as well. What are some of the best practices around building a book of business? And how important is that versus do most salons build that for you?
I would say if you're going to an established salon or barbershop, they are going to have that really well placed in their community. But as a marketing for yourself, go out and talk to people. I have business cards I go and hand out to different places, restaurants and other maybe hair salons that their husbands are looking for a barber.
Prospect. I mean, you prospect the old-fashioned way. You actually network and ask for business.
I'm a whole old-fashioned person. Yes, Instagram is great and it gets your portfolio out there, But more or less the time, people are going to be looking for actual personal experiences from other people because it is such a personal service we give people. And honestly, Google reviews. Ask each of your clients, hey, can you leave me a Google review? When someone's new to the area, they're like, I need to find a barber. And they'll look up Google reviews. If you have 4.75 stars across the board, you're going to be that number one person that person decides to go to.
What percentage of your business is referral-based?
Referral-based, probably say about 40%. And I'd say the other 50 is Google reviews. And then the rest of it's Instagram.
What's it like being a female barber versus being a male barber? I'm guessing there's an advantage that some guys might prefer. Do you find that that your gender has helped you in this career field?
I really do. I feel like it's a lot easier to receive a female's touch than receive a man's touch. I would like the shampoo bowl, for instance, some men still like being touched. And if it's more directed from a female, it's a little bit easier to handle. I've had this conversation multiple times with random people and people in my circle about like how most men would prefer to sit and have a conversation with a female. Most men work with a bunch of other men, so it's nice to have a female side. And it's more of the self-care thing. I feel like it comes easier to women as well. But also there's been multiple different situations where I've actually had a client say, you're my first female barber since my last experience and it was horrible. So let's see what's going to happen. So there's also that huge leap of trust that you have to give that person, like, hey, I'm going to take care of you because I know you've had a bad experience before. I want to make sure that doesn't happen again.
Samantha, I'm going to guess, maybe wrongly, but knowing humans the way I do, that when most people quit you or quit a barber, they just disappear. They don't call you up and say, hey, my last haircut was horrible, or you smelled like cigarette smoke. Or I don't like your body language. Or I'm guessing most people just disappear because most people are cowards.
Getting ghosted.
Getting ghosted. Yeah. To the extent that's a true assessment, like how do you improve your skills when you're losing customers with some occasion, some more than others? How do you know, gosh, I wonder if I should change something because Scott and Tom and Jim and Tina haven't come back. You can't call them up. You probably don't call them up. I don't know. What advice would you generally give for how do you build your self-awareness around what you're doing right and what you're not doing right based when most people quit you and just ghost you?
Yeah, I would say you have to take a look at your surroundings. What are you presenting to your clientele? How are you holding yourself? Are you making your environment good and enjoyable for them? It's a hard one because you don't get a lot of immediate feedback.
I'm guessing at the end of a haircut, no one says, I hate my haircut. You are not talented. I'm never coming back. How often does that ever happen?
Like that blatantly, no, not at all. Right. There's a lot of body cues you can watch from somebody. They could be like, oh yeah, it looks good. And they'll touch like a spot, which means that spot for them is bothering them. So then you can open up the conversation like, oh, I'm glad it looks good for you. Is there something that I can like alter or fix? I see this area you're touching. And then it opens up and be like, oh, okay, that person's open to constructive criticism.
Yeah,
let's make this a better.
I mean, again, it just comes back to this self-awareness and emotional intelligence and communication. Let's talk about the downside of the job, because I think this is an important and practical aspect of this interview. What are some of the things that you were not prepared for, or they warned you about, but you didn't really give it any gravitas, and then you got into your first barbershop or salon or whatever, and then you realized, oh, this is the underbelly of the job, and it's not changing, and I got to figure out how to make the best of this.
Yeah, I would say the hardest part is having to end a relationship with the client. Because they're not respecting the barber's time, other clients' time, showing up multiple times late, not showing up for appointments, disrespecting other barbers. Those are the hardest things to have to tell a grown adult, like, hey, I'm sorry, this isn't working out.
And is that done? Difficult. Is that done via text, on the phone, in the chair, in front of other people? How do you fire a customer?
Usually when they come in, I'll pull them aside and say, hey, can we talk outside for a minute? Just so it's like in our space, but not in front of everybody. So it's like a little bit more private and just kind of just be like, hey, this isn't working out. I'm sorry that we've had multiple altercations this way. And I think it's time. I think someone else would be a better fit for you.
Did you have some training for that? Did your mentor or coach or owner teach you how to do that? Did you have classes in barber school, how to deal with difficult, sensitive, courageous conversations? How did you learn that?
We learned it at the barbershop.
You did.
Kind of just going over, hey, if you have a situation like this, please just take care of it sooner than later, making sure that you are giving them space to also voice their opinion, but also being affirmative, like, hey, this is not the space for you.
That's easier said than done, because I write a lot about having high courage conversations. And so I'm guessing it's not happening with regularity, but it is a conversation that needs to be had with some occasion, and I bet it's awkward. What else is challenging? I look at you and think, gosh, your back must really hurt at the end of the day. And how about carpal tunnel syndrome? Talk about some of the bodily aspects of being a barber. How many years can you keep it up?
Yeah, I always joke. I'm like, I only have so many haircuts left in me. Doing repetitive motion all day, every day. You have to get massages on your shoulder blades. They're constantly lifting up and going up here and just moving around. Hair splinters. Didn't really know that was a thing.
What is that now? Say that again.
A hair splinter.
What's a hair splinter?
A hair goes straight into your skin. It basically feels like fiberglass, and you have to pull them out or else they'll just get deeply embedded. They can like snake through your eyelets of your shoes and your shoelaces and get on the tops of your feet and on your stomach. That was one of those things that I was like, wow, these are pretty painful. But just making sure at the shop I'm at, I always make sure I have my other barbers with me stretch, just because you're standing in a position all day upright on your feet. You might as well get some twists in and get stretching and just making sure that you're physically available to do whatever you need to do.
Samantha, I want you to think of a fellow barber that left the business, and not for some nuanced reason, right? I mean, inherited money or they had an illness, but they chose deliberately to leave the business. I'm interested for listeners to know, what are the reasons people leave or burn out or quit that aren't the outlier? If you had to draw a bell chart, bell curve, and say, hey, here's the vast majority of reasons why people choose to leave barbering, what are they?
I would say that they just want to cut hair. And that's not all barbering is about. Barbering is building a community. Barbering is helping out your fellow barber. You might have a difference of opinion on how you would like a shop to be run. So that would be a huge thing why people would leave.
They don't leave the industry, they leave the shop.
Yes. There's a lot of bouncing around, a lot of moving to different spots, trying to find your home. Like basically you want a place where your home is going to be somewhere where you're going to thrive and be challenged and have good people you come in to work with. And it takes a while to find that. So there's people why they would leave shops, but to leave the industry would just, you just burn out. You're tired of it. You just get a negative attitude. You don't challenge yourself taking continuing educations, and you cut too many heads of hair in a short amount of time, and you just don't give yourself some grace to just do what you want to do.
Talk about pivots. Mm-hmm. So when someone loves barbering, but maybe they want to earn more money, or they want to have an income when they're sick or they're not working, which is a downside of barbering, right? When you're not cutting hair, you're not earning any money. So when you're going on an 8-day vacation, you can do the math. It's a rather expensive proposition, not to mention retirement and insurance and things like that. When someone does pivot within the industry, are they typically becoming a manager of a barber salon? Are they opening up their own barber salon? Are they designing a new scissors or a new line of hair care? When you've thought about people that have stayed in the industry, but they've chosen to pivot out of standing and barbering all day long, do any common pivots come to mind?
Yeah, educator, I think.
Educator, talk about that.
Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people, as someone who's been in the industry for 7+ years, you get to a point where you're like, okay, like I really know what I'm doing and I really enjoy it. And I want to share that with somebody else. And I want to give them the opportunity to get to where I'm at now, where maybe they would have never felt that way if they didn't find someone who's an educator or a mentor to do that. Basically like passing on your skills and all your life lessons you've learned so they can be ready for it, so they don't have to go through all that you went through to get where you're at. And I would say product is another one. People build product companies too, which is really cool. We use product every day, so we see what that industry is missing, and we're able to fill that in a little easier.
And our remaining minutes, if you were to give someone caution to say, gosh, here's a reason not to enter this career, or if you enter this career, maybe think about it as a 10 to 15 year career, is there any, and I don't usually ask guests to attract or repel people towards the career. I like these as just the facts, ma'am. Mm-hmm. But I'd like to know, I'm not sure I know many 50, 60, 70-year-old barbers. I'm sure there's one on Main Street in small town USA, but it seems to me like a career where, and I've been to half dozen barber shops in the last couple of years, it seems like the average barber is probably in their late 20s to early 40s. Mm-hmm. Is that just because I'm going to the wrong shops? Are people usually ending their career and doing something else because they're burnt out? What are some of the reasons not to become a barber?
That's hard for me because I actually just love it. So
that's great.
I always tell people, I'm like, come on, let's go be a barber. If you hate your job, you're going to love it here. The hard thing to not to do it would be probably if you have a really hard time connecting with people, because it would be a really hard job to thrive in if you have a hard time connecting. And or if you need a lot of structure, you have to build that structure for yourself. So if you're someone who needs a lot of guidance to get them to where they need to go, that's going to be something that you'll have to create in yourself to do that, or else you're just going to just be wandering around with no direction, basically.
What would you say about my comment, completely unsubstantiated, that I don't see a lot of 50, 60, 70-year-old barbers around? Call me out on that. Am I just in the wrong barbershops, or what would your assessment of that be?
Definitely see older barbers, but they are in very small towns.
Yeah, they strike me as like the $20 barber, right? That's giving $20 haircut.
Since they were in the military and they opened their own shop and they just kept it going, and they're part of the community. If you go to any city and you want to know where to go, ask the cab driver or a barber. You'll know where to go everywhere.
Might say that is something a prospective barber might want to know, as in it's going to take you 18 months to build your portfolio, or here's the kind of questions you want to ask as you're thinking about the right shop and shop owner to work in. I'm guessing like in any workplace, there's going to be some interpersonal conflict between fellow barbers and things like that. What are some other watch outs, heads up, that you might give people that are still listening to this that are thinking, I'm pretty energized about this. You mean in 3 years, I can make $100,000 as long as I'm self-aware and a good communicator and go to a good school? That's a pretty good track record. There aren't a lot of chemical engineers that are making $100,000 in 3 years. And last time I checked, AI isn't going to be robotically cutting people's hair. So to me, it seems like a pretty...
One of the oldest professions.
One of the correct, yes. Yeah. What advice would you give to people that might be thinking, what else?
Some of the scary parts of it is like, it's up to you. You have to make sure, like, I hate to say the word, like, sell yourself, but like, you are your brand. You have to be able to put your pride aside sometimes. You have to be able to show up. That's a hard thing, I think.
I'm guessing it also takes some level of financial discipline, because I'm not talking about you right now, but I'm guessing the average barber gets, how often are you dispensed your share of the proceeds? Are you paid every Friday, every other Friday? How often do you have the shop disperse your share of the funds to you?
Once a week.
Okay. So you're paid every Friday, mm-hmm. and whatever portion of it is, 10%, 20%, 28%, whatever, some portion of gratuities are coming to you on a daily basis, hourly basis, and they're coming either from the till, if there's a receptionist and a cash checkout. Maybe some are coming to you via a Venmo type transfer and some are in cash. I'm guessing 20% of your income potentially is coming in gratuity. Correct. You've got to have some discipline that you're not spending that throughout the week versus those that are paid every other Friday and they can manage their bills. I'm guessing that's probably an issue for some barbers, managing your cash flow.
Yeah, there's huge ebbs and flows in this industry. I always say the J months are slow, January, June, and July. We got holidays, we got vacations, people out of school. You're not going to get as many of your regular clients or just walk-in clients in general. So you basically have to create a budget for yourself where you're going to know it's going to be different every week. Like, you're not going to have consistency until like you've built it up for a while and then you're able to do that.
Samantha, for the barbering business, do you find that most barbers, are they self-employed, your contractors, your 1099s, meaning you're responsible for your own health care and 401k, or do barbershops provide that?
Most of the barbers that I know are 1099. If not, they're W-2, and they are usually more in the salon side of it.
So as a typical barber, you could be making, say, 60, 70, 80 grand a year. It's a decent income, but you have to make sure you're filing quarterly, or you're paying your own taxes, or you're proactively looking at your tax rate, because you could come into the year with a huge tax debt because you're responsible for all that. Plus, you probably should be saving some money for a rainy day, right? When you're not working, you're not getting paid time off.
Yeah, I put away 30% of my paycheck every time, and I have an accountant that they help me go through all of my expenditures and things I need to do to reduce taxes at the end of the year. It's fun and scary at the same time. I do would love a 401k, but we have to make that ourselves.
Yeah.
In a normal 9-to-5 job, you have someone that matches it, and that's just not
something. Right. Hey, last question. Let's talk about the tools of the trade, because I know this is not like you just go to Target and pick up a pair of scissors, and these are quite expensive. Talk a little bit about what the investment is and how you care for your tools, because it's one of the few careers. I mean, physicians and dentists, they do buy their own tools, but they're
exactly.
Talk about, because I think it's an important part of the job, right? You get what you pay for.
Your tools should match your skills. I 100% believe that. If your skills are old, your tools are old and they're rusty, or they're just not firing on all cylinders, then you're going to have your skills not being showed as much. Every client needs to sanitize, make sure they're oiled and ready to go for the next one. I like to invest in a little bit more high-end shears, just because I love shear work. And I think that they just cut really well, make my job easier at the end if I don't have to go back and refine. I would say on the average barber, clippers are around 200, and then the shears are around anywhere between 150 to 1500, depending on.
I see. So you have a pair of $1,000 scissors. And like an electrician, you have to guard that really carefully, right? Because this is your trade. I'm guessing you don't take your eyes off your scissors, I'm guessing, right? You're very deliberate with them. Yeah, exactly, right? Yeah, in a lockbox every evening. Hey, I so appreciate your practicality today. Maybe a lot of people will hear this and say, didn't have any idea. And what a great, I mean, talk about a career. Obviously, when inflation is higher, people maybe get their haircuts less frequently. But, you know, I'm guessing most people aren't cutting their hair themselves. And so talk about a career that anybody could join. And all they have to do really is just become a great communicator, be self-aware, recognize their body language, and also have high courage conversations. Now, that is not to minimize that, because those actually are really important skills. So I said that kind of tongue in cheek. Oh, and by the way, you also cut hair and you're an artist and a creative expert. Great insight. Samantha Binns, thank you for joining us today on this episode of Career on Course. Thanks for listening to today's Career on Course podcast. I hope you are on fire. I hope you are inspired, focused, and ready for what is next for you. Perhaps you've had some clarity on a job you need to quit. Maybe you're enlightened about a career you never even knew existed, or you have key questions answered to make you focused on your next career journey. If you found the content of this podcast helpful, I'd suggest a next great step is to read the book that I've written called Career on Course, 10 Strategies to Take Your Career from Accidental to Intentional. It's available in hardcover, print, audio, and digital anywhere books are sold. We'd love to have you dig back into more episodes and refer any family, friends, or colleagues in case they want to get their career back on course.